Hello, everybody. Hi, everyone. My name's Emma. I'm an addict. You'd think the unmanageability would get better with time. Not today. Sorry, I wasn't kind of sat here and present. I'm going to tell the truth. I was making coleslaw for the barbecue tomorrow because I've got family coming and we have a party and I'm one of these addicts who has to have it. I can't just leave it half done. You know what I mean? It's got to be done and in the fridge, and I've got to be tidied up before I kind of sit down. And time management has been a little off, shall we say, today, because I'm at the holiday house. These all sound like really high class problems for a ex-drug addict. Do you know what I mean? It's like making coleslaw and at the holiday house. Didn't used to be like this at all. It really didn't. So my name's Emma. I'm an addict. And I, you know, Terry, thanks, Terry. Well, I'm never quite sure whether it's thanks when someone asks me to share. It's the least favourite service that I like to do in Narcotics Anonymous. I'd rather make you all a cup of tea and give you a hug. And I really don't like, I don't like speaking and I don't like sponsoring, but there are things that I have learned to do in my time here. And I'm quite touched that I'm in the Trafalgar Square meeting, because it is a meeting that quite some time ago, my partner who passed away supported lovely Gary in starting this meeting. So to be sharing on the week that I'm celebrating 20 years clean, at this meeting, Paul has never left me. He's always with me. And he turns up in the form of feathers a lot as well with my dad. And I've been at the holiday house and I was on the phone to my mother and this feather just came swirling in through the front door. And Paul, if anybody knew Paul, he had a great presence. So, you know, that's the kind of thing he would do. He would come swirling into the room mid-conversation with mother. So, yes. So I'm grateful to be here. Thank you for asking me. What do I want to share? Okay, so I didn't just get up one day and decide that I was going to take drugs and become an addict. It didn't work like that for me. At the age of four, I chose to try and control my situation at four with food. And I didn't know it at the time, but I clearly wasn't happy in the environment that I was living in. So, you know, that's why I tried to change things with not eating. By the time I was seven or eight, I was stealing money and going off to the sweet shop, because somehow sweeties kind of made that atmosphere bearable. Sweeties always just made it better. And by the time I was 11 and going to secondary school, my mother had left, and my newfound friend at secondary school's parents owned a pub. So that was quite handy, because I used to go there at weekends and just drink and smoke cigarettes until I was sick and then say I wouldn't do it again. And then I used to do it all over again the next weekend. And then when I was 14, I found street drugs, and I was very happy about that. For a while, I was happy about that. Until I started getting consequences. By the time I was 16, just turned 16, I was pregnant. And by the time I was 18, I was standing in Crown Court waiting for, you know, was looking at quite a big sentence as a consequence to my behaviour in my using. And getting and using and finding ways and means to get more landed me in Crown Court with the most probably the worst couple of co-defendant males I could have, as an 18-year-old girl, been standing there with. Fortunately, I got to walk out of Crown Court. And I didn't think to myself at the time, I possibly should ask for some help around my drug use, because clearly it's becoming a huge problem. What I did was I walked out of court and decided I needed to earn money in a way that wasn't going to, you know, land me up. I was quite kamikaze at earning money, and I needed to find a way of not ending up in Crown Court. My boyfriend at the time, his mother, she had a couple of houses that she used to have ladies working out of. So I went to work for her, and spent 10 years running around, booking men to come to the houses and all of that. You can kind of put it together and understand what I'm saying with that without going into too much detail. And that brought its own kind of madness and security in a way, because she had her business set up as such that she had policemen coming to visit and men from, court and lawyers and barristers and God knows what. Anyway, that was my world for about 10 years. And I think I was about 28. Yes, I was. I was 28, and I was 28, and I'd come out of hospital, and I'd never had a I'd always rented my own properties. Anyway, I was offered, because I come out of the hospital, I'd been really poorly. I came out of the hospital, and I was kind of on my last legs, really, of my using. And they offered me a home. I couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? They kind of offered me, it was either council or housing association, social housing. And anyway, I went to look at a property and I didn't like it. I asked them if they'd put a new bathroom and a new kitchen in and all this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? I'd never kind of been in this situation before. I didn't know how it kind of worked. Anyway, they said no. So then I looked at another property and I said no to that. And the third property I looked at, I really liked it, and I moved in. And lo and behold, my neighbour was 5 years in Narcotics Anonymous. What a blessing. I didn't know at the time. Anyway, she ended up taking me to my first meeting. We actually, she took me to the Priory to a reunion, because she had got clean in a treatment centre. And I went with her, and it was at the Priory, actually, in Chelmsford. And there was a wonderful marquee in the grounds. And I was quite taken, because they had, I'm a devil for, I like a cup of tea in a proper cup and saucer. And they had that, and they had smoked salmon sandwiches, and I was delighted. And I sat there listening to these people speaking, and it was like being on another planet. I'd never heard anybody talk. I'd never heard anybody talk about having a problem with drugs and getting clean. It was just like, what on earth is going on here? And I was sitting there, and you could smoke then in these. And I used to smoke Benson and Hedges, and I was just puffing away, drinking tea and smoking Benson and Hedges, and just crying. It was quite dramatic, just thinking, where these people come from? Where have they come from? Who are these people? And there was a very nice man there at the time, and he was speaking. Anyway, we kind of made a beeline for one another. And I'd only got like 5 minutes clean. He'd got 3 months. Anyway, we exchanged numbers, and off I went to my first meeting that night. And I went to my first meeting, and I was given a white key ring. And it's the only white key ring I've ever been given in 20 years. And the man who gave me that white key ring still gives me key rings to this day. Harry, wonderful. It was the 6 o'clock meeting, 6 o'clock Saturday meeting in Colchester at Trinity Health and Healing. And I turned up, and Harry's a really big Aussie man with loads of curly hair. He's about 6 foot, humongous. And he answered the door, and I was like 5.5 stone when I got clean. I was like really tiny. Well, I felt tiny. I probably just was tiny and felt really tiny. Everything was just small in my world by that time. Anyway, he was huge and he hugged me, and I went in. Anyway, it was my first meeting, and I saw the steps and traditions on the wall, and I remembered like sitting there looking at them thinking, oh, there's just no way. And I heard people read the readings, and they read them so well, and I just thought, how do these people, like, what, just what is going on? Like, how do these people know this stuff? And it was really overwhelming, and I was so smashed to bits. I really was. I couldn't even speak. You know, my first 60 days, didn't speak, couldn't speak. And I went to that meeting, and I got my white key ring, and I went to a meeting the next day. And it was at the end of my road where I lived. And I walked there, puffing on the Bensons. I used to wear a baseball cap and puff on Benson and Hedges, just profuses. And I was standing across the road, and I remember this person looking at me, and they came over and they said, oh, you coming into the meeting? You know, and was just really nice and kind to me. And walked me across the road and took me in a meeting and made me a cup of tea. It kind of meant the world to me. And I sat down and I listened, you know, and they told me to come back as well. So I went to another meeting, and I just kept coming to meetings, but I couldn't speak. I couldn't speak. And I kept coming to meetings, you know, kept coming. And I'm still coming to meetings 20 years later, you know. I've never stopped coming to meetings. I have never stopped coming to meetings. You know, I don't always like meetings. I get irritable. I'm kind of getting, I think I'm getting more irritable the older I get. I'm sure I'm getting more intolerant, and I really work on it as well, but I get really irritated. And I've just kept coming back. The nice man with the nice, here we go. I was quite shallow in the early days. He had nice Gucci shoes, and he had lovely aftershave. Anyway, we got in a relationship, and I had like 10 days. He had 3 months, and we had 10 years together. No one told us not to. No, I can't think why. No one said to us, oh, no, you can't do that. Anyway, some people would call that a success. A lot went on with that. But I'm grateful to that man today. You know, the last 10 years, I wanted to kill him. I had a huge resentment with him, right? When we split, my dad got cancer in 2009. We'd kind of had nearly 10 years together. After my dad died, you know, we'd had a great relationship, and we'd had some IVF treatment, and I had some babies on ice. Anyway, we split, and he destroyed the embryos, and I ended up in the police station, as you do. Emma circa 1989 came out, which is not pretty when she makes an appearance. And anyway, I ended up down the police station being fingerprinted and mouth swabbed at 10 years clean. I always say to people, don't put me on a, never put anyone on a pedestal. You know, you catch me on the wrong day with the wrong thing going on, and it can go off. And it did. And I carried that around for like, so my dad died. A year later, 6 months later, I came out of that relationship, and all of that was going on. And it was really tricky. I remember waking up one day thinking that I'd gotten away with not kind of grieving that. And it kind of really, I woke up one day and I was just bereft. I really was. And it was really tricky. It was really tricky. And lovely Paul. Paul was my friend before we had a relationship, and lovely Paul really helped me through those times, really helped me. And time went on, and we got into a relationship, and I really love Paul. If anyone knew Paul Gills, he was blessed. And he really did. He really helped me. He actually took me out of the country and took me to South Africa, because he said, if I don't do something, you're going to end up in prison. Because he knew, you know what I mean, how mental I was, that my embryos had been destroyed, and carried that for a long time. And then Paul Paul got poorly and Paul passed away. And I really didn't think that that was going to happen. We'd been through what we went through with my dad. And then Paul passed away. And I was just utterly, I can't tell you what place I was in. I'd go to meetings and it was like the world was going on. Everything was going on around me. And I felt angry about that. The world hadn't stopped, and it was difficult to navigate at the time. And then 2 years after Paul passed away, my best friend passed away, and it just felt like, what is going on? And I was really stuck. And I'd go to meetings and I'd talk to newcomers and I'd make a cup of tea. I always wanted to do the tea commitment, and that's kind of, I was stuck. That's where I was stuck for quite a few years. My sponsor and I talk about it, and what I did was I just set up home in self-pity. That's what I did. I really did. I can own that today. And I excused my behaviors because of it. I would just behave however I wanted to, because I could, because I had excuses to behave. And it got to a point where I didn't want to be here anymore, really didn't want to be here anymore at all. I kind of thought, my dad and Paul, I can go and be with them. It's going to be great wherever they are. And I got to a really bad place nearly 3 years ago. And it was suggested to reach out to this lady. And, I reached out to her. She got less clean time than me, but she's always been a visible, active member of Narcotics Anonymous. And I reached out to her. And she helped me. She helped me. She's 12 years clean, beautiful lady. But works this program. She is, I don't even want to say militant. She just does this stuff rigorously. And so I asked her for help. And we went through a process. One of those processes being, if there's anyone in this fellowship, in this meeting, who doesn't know about sponsorship or has never read the orange pamphlet with sponsorship, because I hadn't up until 3 years ago. We got some wonderful pamphlets in it. I just give them to newcomers for years. Give the pamphlets to the newcomers, but don't read them. God forbid we read them. So I read the sponsorship pamphlets. Wonderful. Everything you need to know about sponsorship is in that pamphlet. So we went through the pamphlet together, which was a beautiful thing because it kind of cemented what we were going to do. And then we went on. Went through the basic text with her, and then went through the green and gold with her. And it's been a journey. Suffice to say, I don't want to die today. Really don't want to. I'm in a new relationship. Never thought that was going to happen. Didn't see that one coming. He's not one of us either. It's wonderful. There's only room in this house for one of us to be in NA. And life's all right. I'm all right. I'm all right. I it's the first time in a long time where I feel whole again. It's all right to be me. And I separated from my mum for a few years because I find my relationship with my mum very difficult. My daddy who passed, I love him, love him, love him. But my mummy, difficult. And last week she was 80 years old, right? So she was 80 on Monday. She was 80 on the Monday and I was 20 on the Sunday, years clean. And anyway, I said to my sponsor when she took me on, do not expect me to do anything regarding my mother. Do not ask me to make amends. Don't ask me to speak to her. Let's not go there. We're not doing it. Anyway, I went and made amends to my mother the other week, just before she was 80. And what I really wanted was to just for her to have some freedom and for me to be able to relinquish what I have battered her with over the years, which is that she's a really dreadful mother. And I didn't want her to leave this plane and go on to the next carrying that. She needed to have some freedom from that because I have used her as a whipping post for years. And it was thank you very much. I see that. It was interesting. It was not on my time scale at all. I went to go over there. She wasn't there. I went back. She was late back. She came back with friends. They all thought it was wonderful that I was there. I was waiting for her and she was like half an hour late. I needed a wee and I was hungry. I was going to have a tantrum in the car on my own. I decided not to because that was not what this was all about, making it about me. Anyway, she came back. Then they all wanted to have like afternoon tea at 7:30 at night because they thought it was wonderful. They had no idea what I was doing there. None of them had any. They just thought it was wonderful that I was there. So then I'm like, anyway, I waited because I just didn't want to have to go. And I just did not want to have to go through it with my sponsor. Whenever I have to do anything, my sponsor's face is just there. I don't know why that, it's just there. And then I see her face and then I don't even bother going there with, oh, I'm going to have to explain it to her. I sat there and I just thought, okay, all right, okay. Well, drink more tea. It'll be all right. It'll be okay. Anyway, I had to read the amends because there was quite a bit of it because my sponsor gets me to take every single part and own every bit and add the defects. Listen, honestly, it's so detailed. It's just beyond. So I sat there and I was reading it. And Mummy took her glasses off and I thought, oh, no. Anyway, she put them back on again. She's quite stoic, my mum. She won't kind of do all that in front of us. So anyway, I was reading it. And then she said, when you go, is that it? And I said, no, this is an amend, Mummy. What does it look like for you? I was able to ask her, what does this look like for you? And she was able to tell me. And we were able to talk about it. And I was able to tell her what I was capable of, which is just amazing because I don't generally do that with people. I don't generally tell them what I'm capable of and what I'm not. I just don't say, just stump, don't say anything. Just hope it goes all right. And I was able to do that. And then she said to me, can I have that? And I said to her, would you like me to send it to you on your phone? And she said, no, I'd like you to write it in your lovely writing so I can keep it close to me. She said, this is the best birthday. This is the best part of my birthday. Because she was off to Jersey to my brothers. And anyway, she said this. And I thought, oh, that's good. Because usually my brother's golden boy. And he usually gets all the brownie points. And I thought, oh, this year, that's me. From an amends that I was not going to go and do. And anyway, she called me the next day and so we communicate now. And the other day, so this was last week, the other day she found a lump. So 2 days ago, I went over to see her. She's found a lump and she's got to have a biopsy in the next few days, which I will take her to. We'll just see what happens. I'm an addict with a head that will tell me, here we go again. It's going to be another person. I'm going to lose another person. Straight away, I jump into all of that. But I don't want to use, which is amazing. I will try and wind up on this. My illness has had to kind of get quite smart, right? Because using's not going to do anything. And so, when I was talking previously about not wanting to be here anymore, that's where my illness goes. My illness doesn't tell me it'd be nice to go and take some drugs. My illness tells me just go. But that's not going to solve anything. And I'm not in that place today. I'm hoping I've got some time with my mum. And if I haven't, this program has triumphed again because, she has some freedom. She's very, very happy and we're communicating. My biological father, right? So daddy was the man who brought me up, who passed away. But my biological father is also on that dreaded list. And I kind of think, it's coming. But it's okay, because what I've just experienced shows me that I so was not willing to do what I did last week. It took some time. and effort and some tears and lots of sharing in meetings, but I got there. So whatever, you know, whatever it is I need to do, here's the thing. If I don't make amends, right, they're just reservations waiting on the shelf for when a bad day, rainy days come. That's what they are. So, yeah, I don't need reservations sitting on a shelf waiting for me. I'm going to finish on this. It's really lovely to see some ladies at a treatment centre. Hello, treatment centre ladies. Welcome. You're in a really safe place there. I went to treatment at 5 years clean. I got clean in NA. Yeah, treatment's tough. Really tough. But, you know, you're in a safe environment, so that's lovely. It's really nice to be here. Thanks for listening to me, everyone. And, yeah, you just stay there in that treatment centre and do what you need to do for you. And thank you for listening to me. Thank you.